to It's New Orleans, coming to you live from Uptown New Orleans, 3811 St. Charles Avenue. The Collins Hotel. The Collins Hotel is a great place to come and have a drink if you're already in New Orleans, and a great place to come and stay if you're coming to visit us here in New Orleans, especially if you want a Sazerac cocktail or some of the other cocktails I see on the table in front of me. Right now, let me introduce you to my musical partner, Mitch Foreman. Hello, Mitch.
Hey guys, how you doing?
We're good. Mitch is back in our studios working on a Bollywood movie. Are you still working on that thing?
Yeah, I still am. Yeah. It's hard for me to talk and play at the same time.
Well, which one would you rather do, play or talk? You can keep playing if you like.
I gotta play softer than like talk. The movie's still been going on. It's actually not a Bollywood movie.
It's not a Bollywood movie, but it's got some sort of Bollywood music or something in it.
A little bit of Bollywood music, but a little bit of Hollywood.
What are you doing? You're not talking into a microphone is what you're doing.
I love the fact that he says it's a little bit of Bollywood with some Hollywood.
It's got
a little bit of Bollywood and a little bit of Hollywood.
Let me introduce you to our three guests who are here today joining us, Mitch, here at the Collins Hotel.
Alrighty.
We're joined by Peggy Stafford, who's the owner and creator of Stafford Tile on Magazine Street, correct?
Yes.
And Lauren Godin,
right,
who is a food writer and food blogger. Is that two separate things or the same thing?
I think it's two separate things.
Two separate things?
Yeah, I do.
And just to make things more confusing than ever, last show we had two guests called Michael, and now we have two guests called Lauren. We have Lauren Godin, who we just met, and Lauren Tom, who is the inventor, creator, and proprietor of Flirty Girl.
Yes, that's me.
Which is infamous.
Also on Magazine Street.
Yeah,
and also
Flirty
on Magazine
Girl.
Street. How far apart are you guys on Magazine Street?
We're 31-17. Ironically, the score of the Super Bowl, 31-17.
Was it really?
There
yes.
You go.
Wow. That's
where are you?
52-34.
Okay.
And
very
Lauren,
it's cool.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
I never realized that until someone put it on a t-shirt.
Wow.
That's our address.
You put it on a t-shirt because you
make
t-shirts.
Well, it's actually jewelry, but.
Okay. Hey, how am I going to figure this out? How am I going to do Lauren and Lauren? I mean, how do you pronounce your name, Lauren Flirty Girl Tom?
You can call me Flirty Girl. I answer to Lauren,
really?
Flirty Girl, and Mommy, so that's fine.
And
I don't want you to call me Mommy.
I was just going to suggest calling you Mommy. Okay,
can
so,
I call you Mommy? And I usually go by the New Orleans Food Goddess, so that's okay. You can go there.
The New Orleans Food Goddess.
That's right.
Okay, and Peggy, what's your nickname?
The Tile Queen.
Okay, I have to write these down. Tile, Tile Queen,
Food
Goddess.
You know, it's going to get confusing because I also go by New Orleans Food Goddess.
That's right, Mitch.
Gosh
you're,
darn it.
We'll and you're often called Flirty Girl as well, I believe, aren't
right.
you, Mitch? Hey, so people often say, you know, about working in New Orleans, about creating businesses in New Orleans, that New Orleans is a terrible place for business. For various reasons, which I've never heard actually enumerated, but probably to do with corruption and not enough people spending enough money, and very difficult to make things work. And yet three of you three people here, have got really successful businesses, and all started from absolutely nothing, I believe. Started from scratch.
Absolutely.
That's how you do it.
Right.
So, what do people mean when they say New Orleans is a bad business environment? Because you're all looking at me like I'm crazy. You never
Hall.
Heard that.
I think they're talking City about Hall. The corporate. I think they're talking about big corporate. I don't think big corporations here fare as well as the smaller local business. I would love to tell you that I have the answer and the reason for that, but my crystal ball that I possess says that it has to do with the traditional local nature of New Orleans and that people really like to embrace the small guy, the little guy. And as a consequence, that's who everyone supports, and that's who tends to be more successful. So it just happens to be that way. I'm not saying that it's exclusively so, but that's my impression.
So do you think that people in City Hall or in other places that are impediments to business make life difficult for people who come here from out of town?
It's definitely not easy.
Yes, the Tile Queen says yes.
And we're going to let her go ahead and say that.
Tile Queen, what do you mean by it when you say yes?
I think it's the paper processing in the city of New Orleans is impossible. And then, you know, banks are hesitant to give women loans. Awful. I mean, it's just difficult. I lived in Boulder, Colorado before, and you know, it's very easy to start businesses there. You know, in fact,
well,
you know,
why did you start a business here?
Because I love New Orleans. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else in the world.
And what was difficult when you started it? Did you come across or up against any of these obstacles?
Yes. I couldn't get loans, so I lived on popcorn and tuna fish and saltine crackers. for 3 years, and I lived in an apartment that was $300 a month.
And did you lose a lot of weight?
No, I was surprised. Strangely. I know, it was weird. I think it was a cheap wine.
So you really sacrificed to start this tile business of yours. You must love New Orleans.
I do. It's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Are you from here originally?
I'm from Alexandria, Louisiana, which is Rapides Parish, which I know most people in Orleans have never heard of.
Rapides?
Yes, we've heard of it. You don't sound like you're from over there, though.
Oh, yeah. Wait till I finish this glass of wine.
Well, no, we all are Lafayette area. I know Lauren
is from Baton Rouge.
You're from Baton Rouge.
Well, not from New Orleans, but I was in Baton Rouge when I started the company. I moved away for college at LSU.
You were flirty here in New Orleans before you were flirty in Baton Rouge, and now you're flirty in both places.
I guess so, yeah.
So you originally grew up in New Orleans.
Is this a trick question?
No,
yes, I grew up in New Orleans listening to you on the Zephyr. I'm a New Orleans girl.
Ah, what a
But moved away
thing.
To Baton Rouge and just was sick of missing. I miss New Orleans so much that it got in me, in my veins, like never before.
And I'm the transplant.
Where did you come from, Lauren?
I moved here in the late 70s from Chicago. I went to high school and I came here to go to college and I was really young. And I got here and was so blown away by the magic that is New Orleans. I just couldn't get over it. I threw my bags in the dorm and got on the streetcar and headed to the French Quarter and just ate my way around the French Quarter and did not pay a dime for a single piece of food. And I was just turned 17.
Wow, you must have been really hot.
I love the past tense, which suggests that I am now currently not.
No, that wasn't at all what I was suggesting. But I was suggesting you must have been hot even at 17.
I know what you meant, and I don't. That I was just being.
How did you get guys or women to pay for your food?
Can I tell you that I really did nothing other than I didn't do anything. It's not about me. It was about the people.
You said you were a food critic. I know.
No, this is back when I was 17. I was a numbskull. I don't know what I was doing then. At 17, what do you know about anything? I think it's actually, it has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with the way the people are here in New Orleans. It's not about me. It's about them. They were so excited to have someone new who really cared and really was interested in what was going on. I walked into Desire Cafe and I'd never seen crawfish, and the guy behind the bar couldn't believe it. I was like, I thought they were langoustine. You know, I was like, oh my God, langoustine!
But let's just
fabulous.
First of all, let's just get one thing completely straight here. How far is Rapides Parish from New Orleans?
That's her. She can. Oh, you're from that. I'm from Chicago.
Came from Chicago. That's right. I'm sorry.
That's
I'm already confused.
15 hours by vehicle.
So you never even heard. You've never seen a crawfish. So you came from Chicago. I'm sorry.
Right.
I totally got that wrong. You're from Rapides Parish, Tile Queen.
Yes.
Food Goddess is from Chicago.
Yeah, originally.
Okay. So did you go back? I mean, after you went to... What did you study in school when you were walking around getting bought meals?
Well, I started off in psychology, which I didn't do very well with. And then I kind of bebopped around a few different things from anthropology and all kinds of nonsense and landed... My degree is in theater, which I think makes more sense if you know me. It makes more sense with my personality. I got my degree in theater from Loyola University, and
does that mean you're an actress?
No, well, of a sort. No.
I like their facial expression, that
well,
sort of screwing up your nose and looking like you smelt something bad.
Well, because the truth of the matter is that I guess to a degree the answer is yes, but my favorite thing was more to be behind the scenes. I liked doing things like directing and hair and makeup,
right.
And you know, that kind of back of house. But everybody always tries to throw me on the stage. So, which is very strange because my career, as it got moved along more recently, I did television, I did radio, and so that's why I screwed up my face because I never wanted to be front of house. I like back of house.
But you ended up, you've been a broadcaster, and you've been on TV and on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do on TV? You're
on television. Yes, I did, which was really odd. I actually was hired as a reporter for a couple different local television stations doing food coverage and restaurant coverage. I did that, and I had my own radio show on a couple different radio stations here as well, talking about food, restaurants, and dining. And like I said, it was never my plan ever to do that. Not at all. It just sort of happened that way.
We're going to have to get on to exactly how that happened, because that's pretty... It's easy to say those sort of sentences, is that... oh yeah, I was on the radio and I was on TV, but that's not really what I wanted to do when there's thousands of people who would just be dying to
get on the radio. That's why I say that with a lot of humility, because I do know that. And when I was at Loyola and studying theater and doing acting, and there were people who really, that was their passion, they really wanted it, and you know, and I didn't feel that they felt. And so I say that.
Maybe that's why you were successful, because you didn't really care.
You weren't trying so hard to get in there.
Flirty Girl, you were on the radio too. And you were also on TV, weren't you?
Yes, I did both.
How did you get into radio? Did you really want to, or did they throw you into it as well?
I listened to Grant Morris on the Zephyr and just said, that's what I want to do with the rest of my life. No, I went, you want to know the story?
Yes.
I went to the Angela Hill show when I was 12 years old. It was Groundhog Day, Shadow Day, and I shadowed Angela Hill for a whole day, and I just said, this is what I want to do. I want to be like Angela Hill and be on the news.
For people who don't know who Angela Hill is, who is she?
Angela Hill is our longtime anchor on WWL TV, and she's very famous and well-known for her crazy outfits that she always buys from Goodwill. She was wearing a sweater that was like a poinsettia the other day. Like, the body was a stem, and the collar was petals, and her head was the, you know, the, what do you call it, of the flower?
Wow.
You know, the stamen.
The stamen. Oh.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Too many cocktails. It just sounded dirty. But yeah, that's why I got into it.
Or the pistol.
Because of your one day shadowing.
That's when I just realized.
I wonder what would have happened if you wouldn't have shadowed someone else, like in the sanitation department or in the mayor's office. Do you think you would have been? What if you had shadowed?
What a guy, huh?
Sidney Torres, the garbage man.
Who doesn't want to shadow Sidney Torres?
I know, and he's on Twitter too,
like,
day and night.
Only
really?
In New Orleans.
Is he single?
He's cute. Well, I mean, define that.
Someone not married, but that would typically be someone single.
Is he? Would he be available? He's the class. He's adding class to trash. Is
right.
So I guess that makes you available.
Should go global with that.
Yeah.
He
so
should.
he's your idea of a dream guy, tile goddess.
No, I just like to look at him.
So you wouldn't? Have you ever talked to him or met him?
Nope. I've sold him some tile before.
Well, how did you do that without talking to him?
Well, because, you know, in my business, there are easy ways to sell time without meeting people.
Okay, well, now we're a little unclear as to what that exactly means, because
well,
I've been in your tile
designers.
Store, and I had to have long conversations. Oh, I see.
Designers, you know, architects.
So he doesn't come in the store
himself.
Oh, yeah,
he's too good for that. He's, you know, would rather ride around in that,
in a trash,
you know, that
little
big,
black
huge,
golf cart.
Yeah.
He's got. Wow, so he's your ideal guy. Sidney
well,
Torres. I'm sure we could set that up for you.
Okay.
If you couldn't do it for yourself, couldn't
right.
we? He's, I guess we should tell people who are not from New Orleans who he is. Sidney Torres is a guy who, I don't even know what he did. He's a friend of Lenny Kravitz. That's how what I thought he was famous for until...
He's also from down the road and a very old family from down the road in Chalmette.
Yeah, in Chalmette. He is from Chalmette. And then after the storm, after the hurricane... He decided somehow that he should pick up the trash.
He's a very clever fella.
And he somehow got enough trash trucks. I mean, this is hell. What the heck? We should find this out from him, really.
I'm sure it's a great story.
It must
I thought
be.
He had a reality show called Trash Men, too, didn't he?
Yeah.
He has his own TV show and everything.
National reality TV show. It's crazy.
Well, I didn't even know anything about that. And so anyway, he's really handsome, and he looks sort of like a rock star himself.
Right.
And he's the trash man, and he could probably run for office and win. Here,
oh, yeah. You got to be really hot to eat free in the French Quarter, and you got to be really hot to be a trash man to be sexy, okay?
That's true.
Can we just say that
there
we've established
go.
That?
I think
well
we can
done,
all
sister,
agree on that.
Right.
Let me ask you three a question. Do you three all know each other?
I know Lauren and I know each other.
That's Lauren and Lauren. That's Flirty,
Flirty and
Girl
and
Flirty
and
the Goddess. Food
Goddess.
Goddess.
And we met because when Flirty was doing some food writing, back like right around, right after the storm, I guess it was, I was on Twitter, and she was on Twitter, and she wrote and was asking certain questions, looking for some, you know, just to fill in some blanks on some historical stuff, and I love culinary history, so I would write her and say, oh, here you go, and she would say, oh, thanks, Lauren, and then we developed our friendship.
So you guys met on Twitter.
Yeah,
basically. That's how I knew of what she did and the knowledge that she has. She just knows so much. If you ever want to know what restaurant to take someone to, I mean, Lauren is a great friend to have in the city because she's so knowledgeable.
Because she eats for nothing as well.
No, I'm serious.
No, I don't eat for nothing.
Now you have to pay for it.
I get paid nothing.
You never should have told me you were a food critic.
Hey, are you guys fans of jazz?
Big time. Oh, absolutely.
Would you like to hear Mitch Foreman play something for us?
Absolutely.
If we can see. Well, there's Mitch on our screen
I'm
here.
I'm ready. Mitch is right there.
What do you what's on your mind?
Hey, well, I was thinking of earlier doing like a real jazz song based on I've Got Rhythm, but I'm not sure whether to go with a more girl-themed song.
I like the girl-theme idea, me.
Have you guys got any requests?
Oh my goodness.
Well, you know, a girl-themed jazz song. What are you thinking of, Mitch?
I'm working on the CD of songs with vocalists, and one of the songs
like
I was
something that Lindsay
Zarawalski
does.
Oh, okay.
Saucy.
What, Mitch? You're working on a female jazz song?
Chatelaine.
And the song I was thinking of was called "I'm Not That Girl from Wicked."
Oh, cool.
Okay.
So let's try that. It goes something like this. It's a beautiful song. I hear the phone going off in the studio, but we'll just ignore that.
Thank you.
What did you say it's called?
It's called I'm Not That Girl from Wicked.
Hmm. I'm Not That Girl. Very nice. Is that original, one of yours?
No. From the hit musical, Wicked.
Wicked, from Wicked. Ooh. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you say that. Okay.
That's fabulous show, by the way, Wicked.
Yes.
Did you go see that, Flirty Girl?
Loved it.
So, yes. Flirty Girl, we haven't even... Anyone who's listening to this and hasn't been to New Orleans and doesn't know what... the heck the flirty is talking about is going to be wondering what... Let's just talk about flirty as a word. It's not spelled F-L-I-R-T-Y like a flirty little girl.
No, it's not.
It's spelled...
like the fleur-de-lis, the F-L-E-U-R-T-Y. So it's a fun, flirty New Orleans girl brand.
I get it.
And you must have been... were you high or drunk or just... or just feeling good the day you came up with that name?
Why does it have to be I was drinking? I was drinking, but why does it have to be that I was?
I don't know, but because it's a brilliant name, because it's flirty, and it's flirty, which is what you do is sell T-shirts or design and sell T-shirts.
Right.
And so it's a pretty, and it's the fleur-de-lis.
The fleur-de-lis.
And just when you think there's no more words left that you can...
Let me tell you, you put the word out there, then everybody starts using it. That's what happens, you know. And I'm not talking about who dat. I just want to, that's different. You know, the word spelled a certain way. When I had trademarked it, wasn't being used
as flirty, and now people are stealing your stuff.
Yeah,
really?
It's happening.
Let's just say imitation.
Do you have an attorney? I'm sure you do.
Yes, we do. But you just hate to do that. You
well,
know,
you,
but it's
I
happening.
Mean, you almost have to do it because now we're going to have to talk about the whole thing here, aren't we?
Well, we, you know, we trademark the word, so we have it. But, you know, a couple of other stores selling fashion and the word flirty. So it's, you know, it creates brand confusion. But
well, let's talk about brand confusion because that's the reason you're so famous in New Orleans. I see you're making a face like you just smelt something bad as well.
No, no, I didn't.
Tile Queen, it's going to be your turn in a minute to smell something bad. But flirty girl, first of all, the reason that that you're infamous in New Orleans is because of the very football score you were talking about earlier, which was, what was the final score?
31-17.
31-17. And in the course of the build-up to the Super Bowl here, where the Saints ended up victorious, you came up with a bunch of T-shirts that said "Who Dat" on them, which
right.
has been
in preseason. I also want to throw in there before we were undefeated or anything like that.
So you were in there from the beginning with the "Who Dat."
From the beginning, and okay. a Saints fan my whole life.
So now I'm sure you've told the story 100 times, and you're probably sick of telling the story, but it's made you a really well-known personality in New Orleans, probably mm-hmm. like nothing ever could have, just from someone selling T-shirts, if you don't mind, even though they are gorgeous T-shirts.
No,
but,
you've
been rocketed to stardom here because you really took on the big guys on behalf of, if you're talking about
very
how people
cool.
in New Orleans like the underdog. So why don't you, for the benefit of people listening to us, tell us in your own words how you ended up, began and ended up taking on the National Football League and whoever else is out to get you.
Well, it started with the NFL, and they approached us and said, you can't print "Who Dat" on T-shirts with Florida Lees. So after some research into the whole issue, they later came and apologized. They said, we're sorry. We don't own that. We don't claim to. We're sorry. Just don't put anything on your website in product description that says Saints or says, you know, black and gold football. So even in product description. So be careful if you have a product that does, you know, support the Saints or that culture. So they apologized. And then we were approached by these two brothers who wrote the "Who Dat" song in the 80s.
The "Who Dat" song?
Yeah, with
That's
Aaron Neville. Yeah.
Who Dat?
That song.
Hey.
So, which I'm sure Mitch could play.
Food Goddess could sing that for us.
If I were so inclined.
They wanted us to enter into a royalty agreement and us pay them for using the word on "Who Dat" on shirts.
Okay, let's just slow down for a minute. First of all, Food Goddess, do a couple of lines of the "Who Dat" song for us.
Well, it's really more of a chant than
yeah.
a song.
Yeah.
Right?
But the song goes, oh, when the Saints go marching in. Oh, when the Saints go marching in. Oh, how I want to be in that number.
And then
it goes into the "Who Dat" chant.
And then it goes, "Who Dat?
Who Dat say they're going to beat them Saints?" It's like, who is that?
Right.
Thank you. Mitch has got it. Listen, that's the tune right there.
Well, it's just "When the Saints Go Marching In," which is the song that's been around forever and ever. The thing that people got excited about was the chant. That "Who Dat? Who Dat saying going to beat them Saints?" And
now,
if I could tell you how many times I heard that years and years and years before.
Well, apparently, though, somebody wrote that, and "Who Dat" wrote that exactly. Who was
those
that?
Two
who
brothers?
The monasteries.
What are their names?
Well, they didn't come up with it. They
what
recorded
are they
a song.
What are their names, these guys? Can you say that, or is it a
I'll
secret?
I'll say it so that Miss Flirty doesn't get in any hot water.
Okay, got it.
Their last name is Monastery.
Monastery.
And the Monastery brothers are the ones, but
like
also...
monks. Spoke like a monk's monastery?
No, it's actually spelled more of sort of an Italian slash French.
Okay,
kind
with
of
an
thing.
I sort of ending or
I-E
or something.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
so
then
Mr.
also
Mr. and Mr. Monastery.
Yeah, the two Monastery brothers, and then also you've got some guys that were at St. Ogg's, which is a popular local high school,
yeah.
who also lay claim to having used that same type of chant and that phrase. And you know what? In the end, you know, I know it matters to Flirty because there's a dollars and cents thing in the heart of all New Orleanians. It just doesn't matter. It's our chant. It's our thing.
Everybody
and,
in New Orleans feels that we all communally own the chant "Who Dat" because
well,
we all support the Saints and
we
we're all
do,
in this thing together.
Yeah.
But somebody must have thought about
they
it.
They did. When
so
they recorded that song.
Is it Mr. and Mr.
They
Monastery?
Did. They trademarked
did.
That. And the best way to describe what happened, it's, you know, should they have ever been allowed to trademark that phrase? That's the issue.
Yeah.
And number two, they didn't hold on to it. They let it expire. They let it go. So the best way to explain it is it's like a football player going down the field with a football. They drop it. They pick it up. They drop it. They pick it up. You don't get that touchdown. So if they had enforced it and held on to it and protected that trademark, they may have a viable claim. But that's just kind of where we stand. And the people of New Orleans, the NFL was asked at our hearing. The judge asked the NFL, do you feel that Who Dat is in the public domain? And the NFL went on the record and said, yes, we feel that it belongs to the people. So there are just two people in the city of New Orleans who feel like it's theirs.
But now, what is the legal... So what was the judgment on all this whole thing then?
We've only had hearings, and we go to trial this summer.
So we're in the middle of a legal proceeding, so you can't really talk too much.
No,
So that's why Food Goddess has to speak on your behalf then.
Well, or I have to...
Not on your behalf.
In.
Let's make that perfectly clear.
Not on
your behalf.
Yes, please. Legal career is not mine.
Nothing I've said has not been written in the papers. So, I mean, that's...
Okay.
It is a big deal. We had to do things, you know, to protect ourselves, and, you know, we've been really fortunate. The support of people has been just overwhelming. When all this really got heated up, we had ESPN, Good Morning America, The Today Show, NPR at our little store on Oak Street. I mean,
it's made you huge.
Right.
You're famous.
We've done is, you know, we didn't stop selling the shirts. We didn't pay a royalty. We will if we have to. If it is found that... Oh, absolutely.
Have you been saving up?
If we have to, we will. But
how much have you got on you?
Because I can't say that.
We need to settle up.
But the thing is that, you know, we feel a certain way that we shouldn't have to enter into a royalty agreement.
Yeah, but then again, Peggy, what's your position on this as a business person
You have a store. Go, girl. It's so exciting. I mean, it's been fantastic to read about.
It's been an amazing story.
It's fantastic.
And really, everyone's rallied behind you so much, Flirty.
Absolutely.
But Peggy, now, do you sell tiles with a fleur-de-lis on them?
We didn't change the amount of fleur-de-lis tiles that we sell when the Saints won, but I do have a huge mosaic in my window that I had one of the Jets fans produce in 2 or 3 days, overnight it to me when we knew we were going to the Super Bowl.
And
yeah,
did that
hurt him really badly. And I'm going to see him in a couple of months, and I, you know.
What do you mean a Jets fan? What do you mean? You mean someone who...
Well, don't you remember, you know, that if the Jets had won, you know, there were a couple of games where that if the Jets had won, they might have been going to the Super Bowl, too.
Oh, okay.
So they lost, and it was that one pivotal game that I called him up on Monday, and I was all excited, and he had a really bad hangover.
He's a tile maker guy.
Remember you told me that you would make that thing for me that I really wanted? Well, I decided what I really wanted, and it's going to be really, really hard for you to make it. And so we designed it, and it was huge. In fact, you know, we're like, I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
You still have it hanging in the window?
Oh, yeah.
So I guess you're going to have to keep it there.
It's gold glass, and, you know, it's pretty fantastic.
So how did you start? Did you start designing tiles?
Tiles
is a weird thing. Isn't it? I mean, who has ever thought about opening a tile store?
Well,
you can go to Home Depot and buy them.
I lived in a house that had a lot of tile in it. That's what I think. And
really?
I've tried to do a lot of other things in my life that I thought would be, you know, profitable. And
What did you try to do?
I was a paralegal. I thought I was going to be a lawyer. And then I went to graduate school for English literature. I thought I was going to be a professor.
She looks like she could be any of those things right now. You do. I can see you.
You wanted to be a professor of English literature.
Well, that's what I thought, you know. So I did teach school for a while, and I enjoyed that. But
what school did you teach at? Here in New Orleans?
No, this was when I was in Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah.
And I taught school in the afternoon, and I worked at a store that sold tile and...
As a teacher, and then you moonlighted as a tile salesperson.
Yes, I was moonlighting. And
you fell in love with tiles.
I fell in love
with
tiles, but I still didn't think I could do it. You know, I thought, well, this could just be a passion. But I think, you know, the important
That's the important thing, isn't it? To turn your passion into a business.
It is.
But how did you... I mean, I know that you starved for 3 years and nobody would give you any money to open a business.
No, they didn't feed me for free either. I could have just lied and said I was going to be a food critic.
Yeah.
And then maybe they would have fed me for free. I'd be really, you know, enjoying that. But I didn't.
You're going to get me in all kinds of trouble with my publications who... I do not get any food for free.
No. Well, everybody's going to say they're food critics now.
That's a legal disclaimer.
You have to speak on her behalf now.
Thank you.
I'll talk about food all day.
So Peggy, when you were working as a school teacher, you were moonlighting as a tile person. You had dreams of becoming a professor of English literature.
Right.
And somewhere along the way, you invented and designed and created a board game.
Oh, I did do that. Yeah. Yes, that was really hard. I can tell you how that happened, because I wasn't actually admitted to graduate school in English, because I had a poli sci degree as an undergrad, and I wasn't admitted. So I used
what does that
to
mean?
Sit,
you couldn't I
was,
get in?
I was admitted on probation, and so I every day I would sit in the office of the administration of the English literature. I was so tenacious. I'm going to sit there every day. And so I sat there every day. And
what school was this at?
This is at CU Boulder. And so one day, you know, of course I'd gotten to be friends with everyone.
No kidding.
Eventually. So one day this lady, you know, someone called in, and the secretary answered the phone, and she said, well, I might have somebody in mind who could do that for you. And I was sitting there, of course, as I always was. And she said, you know, she put her hand over the phone and she said, do you need a job? And I was like, yeah, I need a job. Of course I need a job. You know, I need a job and I need to get admitted to this school. So if that helps, I'll do it all. So I did that.
What was the job?
I went up to this people's house. They live way up in the mountains, and it was like all these switchbacks, you know, it was snowing, and it was developing an English grammar board game, and it was really cool. And it was their game,
and yes, they wanted someone to help design
a
board game.
Somebody to
so
help.
Who would you call if not the college and see is someone sitting around in the lobby
exactly
waiting to get into graduate school?
Exactly.
Maybe you could send her up here.
Exactly. And he was loved music and loved New Orleans and loved, you know, well, he, you know, just sort of was enjoyed it. So he would play his guitar sometime. He had a lot of money.
Were you getting paid for this?
Yeah, I got paid. Yeah.
And was it really serious, or was the guy just someone to hang out with?
They sold it to
Mattel. What was the name of the game?
I don't know if it ever had a name. I mean, because you just sell an idea. Well, you sell an idea.
What was the idea then?
Okay, so this was the idea. My job was to look up very famous quotes by Oscar Wilde or, you know, Francis Parker.
I don't know who Francis Parker is. Well, does anybody here, honestly?
All
goddess.
Kinds of...
Who's Francis Parker?
A writer of English literature.
Well, it didn't matter.
Okay.
You know, it could have been
Theodore Roosevelt.
Did you
know that flirty?
No, I did not. No. Francis Parker.
I've never heard of Francis Parker.
Look her up.
She's the one who said, okay, gosh, this is going to be hard. One drink, I'm fine. You know, I'm under
minimum.
the whole thing. I'm under the table.
Oh, and then I'm the third. I'm under the man.
I'm under the man.
I love that one. That's her.
That would be a great T-shirt. What is the saying?
Okay, let's see. Two drinks.
Food goddess
I'm on,
is looking
okay,
it up.
Okay, she's looking it up.
Two drinks. I'm on the bar. Floor.
Yeah,
something. Two drinks. I'm on the floor. Third drink. I'm under the man. Oh, something like yeah.
Oh,
look it up.
Okay, is it Dorothy Parker?
Yes, Dorothy Parker.
And I knew that's what she meant, and I didn't want to be a little miscorrect. It's Dorothy Parker.
Okay. Well, it's okay. It's been a long time since
you came up.
It's a lot of tiles under the bridge.
Yeah, a lot of tile.
So that's what we did.
So then we had to dissect it.
But this is before the internet. Long before the internet.
Way before the internet.
So how are you looking up?
So you look it up in
Francis
books,
Parker quotes.
And you know, he's playing the guitar. I said Francis, I'm sorry. Dorothy
okay,
Parker.
I don't mean to rub it in. But how are you looking up?
You're sitting in a house. Sitting way up in the mountains.
In the mountains, and someone says to you, what was that thing that Oscar Wilde said about, I have nothing to declare but my genius? Or something.
Wait.
Like that. So what did you do? What are you supposed to do? You go down to the library, back to the grad school?
Oh, no. So what you do is basically you look them up, and I had to dissect them grammatically.
So
he had some books. About grammarians and to be a grammarian.
Oh, my God. Nobody would have bought that game, surely.
Well, they did. Someone, Mattel, bought the game.
So
they did.
I would have bought that game. I'm a writer.
It was actually
that appeals
fun.
To me.
What is the thing? So you pull a card out, and it's got a quote by Dorothy Parker that says,
and so it's
I'd
funny.
Rather have a bottle in front of me or
me
something.
Than a frontal lobotomy.
And you say which one is the verb or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, come on.
But then you have fun talking about it. And,
no, I don't think you do. Do you really? What's the verb? Oh, I wonder.
Or then
did you have fun in school talking about that, flirty?
Well,
wow.
Well,
I'm trying to find the verb. I'm sorry.
I can't remember which one the verb is even. It's a doing word.
Maybe then third graders would like it. How about that? Or maybe teachers.
I don't think even third graders would like that game. That sounds horrible.
And they did sell it for scholastic purposes.
Oh, that may be why. Because I was going to say, maybe if he had a drink every time you got one right.
Right.
You know, like that. that game. That's sort of a shots game.
Yeah, it was it was a lot of fun, and I got snowed in up there. Now that was really challenging, you know, because I don't know if anybody's lived in Colorado, but you know, if you get snowed in, you're just spending the night, and that's kind of, you know, it's a little awkward.
Well, I guess you got lots of grammar to pass, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, okay, this is kind of a little old. It's ready to, you know, ready for not to think about grammar any longer. So you
got out of that. Did you ever get into grad school?
Oh, I finished.
Of course. You graduated from grad school with a degree in English literature.
Yes, I did. Absolutely. It was hard as hell.
Wow, really love tiles in New Orleans. You've had so many options to do other things.
Well, I think everyone has options to do whatever they want. So I came here. I wanted to start a new business. Well, I did a lot of interior design work. I built a house in Cozumel, Mexico.
Oh, that sounds so easy to say, doesn't it? In just a sentence.
Oh,
I built a house in Cozumel, Mexico.
I did that because I really got into scuba diving, and I thought maybe I'd just, you know, live there and do construction supervision for people who wanted to build houses
there. Why wouldn't you do that?
Would you like the Dorothy Parker quote so that we can just close that and leave it?
Okay, yes, you have the laptop going over here.
It says, I like to have a martini, two at the very most. After three, I'm under the table. After four, I'm under my host.
Okay. That's pretty good. Well done. I see you've been typing away here, Food Goddess, the whole time that we've been talking.
Yes.
Is that polite?
Well, it is in this company, since we're live tweeting your podcast. And since that's promotional for you, I would hope you think
so. I just wondered. I just wondered what the etiquette is, because I see everyone's got their phones out now.
I know.
Flirty's
I need a live tweet, too. She just
Flirty's
reminded me.
Flirty's got her phone out. Yeah.
I put it out here because I think people would love to know that you're here and what you do, and more people. And so I decided to pull out the laptop.
Well, I hope you're going to delete that I didn't know Frances versus Dorothy Parker.
I most certainly would never out you.
We'll never mention that.
Can we
one
just
more
like
time
smudge
again.
That over?
Yeah.
We can.
But you know, we should make Mitch Foreman play something along that theme, because isn't Dorothy Parker famous? She's a New Yorker, right? Doesn't she used to hang out at the Algonquin?
Yes.
Mitch?
There's like a Prince song with Dorothy Parker.
Hello.
Do you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. What were you saying?
I thought there was a Prince song with Dorothy Parker in it.
Oh, that could be.
Is there?
I'll have to look into that for next show.
Okay, whoops. Okay,
it's called The Ballad of Dorothy Parker.
Who wrote
it? Yeah, right.
That's Prince.
Prince, The Ballad of Dorothy Parker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a cool song.
Mitch, what do you feel like playing for us?
Well, I'm not going to play The Ballad of Dorothy Parker. I'm going to play you. It's a New Orleans jazz song, so let's play a little jazz. A little jazz.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. Welcome.
Very nice. What's that called?
You know, it's based on I've Got Rhythm.
Okay.
It's called the Dorothy Parker's Got Rhythm.
Dorothy Parker's Got Rhythm adaptation. Yeah. Can you get sued for saying the word Dorothy Parker?
No.
I think that's out of copyright now? You think?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you have to be careful when you write stuff about food, food goddess, that you're going to upset people?
Oh, okay, that's a double question. Yes, I'm careful about what I write. And no, I don't worry about hurting people's feelings because I think honesty is the best policy. And I am really careful about what I write in that way. I research it. And, it's opinion-based journalism. Everybody has an opinion. And the only thing that you has changed over time is there are rules in place that when you, as a food writer, if you are getting freebies, the FCC requires that you have to disclose that. So if somebody sends out an app or a lanyap, as we call it here, I always have to disclose that, and I do. Then on the other hand, there are lawsuits that have actually been successful by restaurants against newspaper food critics. And that has, kind of set everything on its heel. And it's very, very, it's fascinating, to be honest with you. It depends, I think, in how you go about doing it and what you have to say. There's constructive criticism and downright being snarky and mean.
Right.
I am of the mindset to be more constructively critical. There are certain people and certain chefs in certain restaurants that just get under my skin. And sometimes I let fly, but that's generally on my personal blog. Versus right. anything I would write for a publication.
You mean you just don't like the guy, never mind his food?
Well, no. Both of those things. I might not like the guy and I might not like his food as well, or her food, as the case may be. I think that it's fascinating because the most important thing about writing about food is to make people hungry.
Is
so,
it?
Yes,
really?
Of
That's
course.
What you're trying to do, make us hungry.
Absolutely, because the point is to put a butt in a chair. The point isn't, in my opinion, to to tear someone down. What does that do good for anybody, except maybe to vent your spleen?
Well,
so that doesn't really do anybody
any
good.
I thought the idea was that you're writing about food as a sort of an art.
Well, I do.
Like an art critic
Very
would
much
write
so.
About art.
Oh, I see.
You're not trying to sell
critic.
Paintings.
No, see, I never fancied myself
food.
A critic.
Right.
I'm a food writer, not a food critic.
What's the difference?
I think a critic, more classically a critic, does exactly what you say. They look at the ambiance of a restaurant, they cover the menu, they cover the temperature, the service, the whole nine yards, and then they classically cover and discuss both positive and negatively what happens in their experience at a restaurant or their several experiences, if they're doing it legitimately, which they should go more than once over a
right.
span of time.
Which is a useful thing for people in the general public to be if you read a reviewer that you trust,
exactly.
so you know where you want to go and where you don't want to go.
Right, but I've always taken the position, in the way I operate, I've been accused of being a cheerleader, but I always think it's much more fun to tell somebody where there's something really excellent, really interesting, fun, and different, a great place to go to have a terrific experience. It's still my opinion, and you may not have that experience, but it's my job, I see, to tell people what I think is really delicious. And so, generally speaking, if I don't have anything nice to say, I typically, not always, but typically, I just leave it alone. If I'm not writing about your restaurant, you need to know that there's a reason for that. You can
okay.
figure it out.
That's
Silence
interesting.
Is golden.
So if you go to a place and you don't like it and you think the food's no good, you just forget about it.
Yeah, I just leave
quietly
it alone.
Just walk away.
Yeah, sometimes I will go to the chef or to the management and I will, make my voice known. I'll say, hey, you know what, I think you need to work on that. Or, it wasn't a great experience, here's why. Sometimes they tell me to, stuff it. And sometimes they say thank you.
Right.
More often they say thank you because, again, it's all about how you approach someone. You don't come up and say, hey, this was crap. That somehow,
right.
What is that old saying? Get more flies with honey than you do with vinegar.
Francis yeah. Parker.
My favorite.
Yeah, there you go.
After Dorothy. But I think that's how I approach it.
Right.
I don't believe in the anonymous thing. I think that's nonsense. I don't believe in rules about food and imposing these crazy, guidelines. Yeah, food is a living thing, right? And it changes, and people change, and you have to be flexible and, I think, knowledgeable. Many, many, many newspaper food writers have absolutely no background in food whatsoever. And to be perfectly honest with you, that offends my sensibilities. Now, there are really two factions about that whole thing.
You started off as an actress.
I went to culinary school.
Oh, you did? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, we didn't know that.
Yeah.
You went to culinary school after you were an actress and a TV presenter.
It's a very long and
so you're a chef.
Boring story. Oh, I would never go so far as to call myself a chef. I went to culinary school in Paris, and I did a stage.
Wow, Paris, Cozumel, yeah. Baton Rouge.
Well, oh, stop.
But the truth is that I went to Paris because my boy, then boyfriend, now husband, who I've been with 27 years.
Fabulous guy.
Thank you very
You guys
much.
Are so cute.
Thank you.
I just
that's
love really
her.
Sweet. But he went to go to law school, and he did his summer programming in Paris, and he, for some bizarre reason, thought he was going without me, and that was a really, really sadly mistaken impression.
Yes.
I applied to...
You soon learned that.
Yeah. I applied to culinary schools, and I was accepted to the Ritz Escoffier, which at the time was really kind of brand new, and it's inside in the bottom of the hotel, the Ritz, at the Place Vendôme. And at that time, they were taking only 10 people in the world. So the question is, how the hell did you get in there, Lauren? Well, I can write the biggest load of bologna you've ever read.
Do you eat bologna?
I do. Well, it's not my favorite, but I do
but
eat it.
But you do eat it yeah, as a food yeah, critic. Yeah. So how did you get in? Why don't you just tell us?
I wrote an essay that it was not lies. It was just very clever truths.
Based on a true story.
Yeah, no. No. I do speak French. I told them I didn't speak anything because I really wanted to kind of lay low. I actually am a very avid cook and always have been, and a very avid foodie. And I did tell them that in my essay. But when I said that I attended numerous demonstrations of chefs and chef's cookery and a cooking demos, I just left out that it was on Channel 12 in front of the television set here in New Orleans.
Well, it got you in. Hey, who are the other 9 people who were around?
Very interesting group of people. One gal, her uncle is in the Senate, was Pat Moynihan, and so Aurora was in my class. A gal from Munich, who's an older woman, and she was very interesting. And then a woman from Spain who was fascinating, and then a bunch of gals from Japan.
Is this all women, this thing?
No, there was a couple guys, but at that moment there was a predominance of women. And the 3 gals from Japan, all their names sounded like major oil companies. This Conoco and Sonoco and...
Mexico.
Right, exactly. And they were precious, but they were petrified of... a cut of meat. They didn't want to take a cleaver to anything. And so when we had to do... I became kind of the pet of the teachers of the class because I would go at 4 o'clock in the morning to the farmers markets with the chefs, and I would carry back the rabbits, you know, by their ears with their bottom, you know.
Dead.
And I would, I've yeah. Right. And then the poor Japanese girls, they... One spoke only Japanese. One spoke... Japanese and French, and one spoke Japanese and English. So when they had a question, it would go through this daisy chain of language to get to me, and then I would respond, and then it would go back to them. And one day when we had the rabbits, the gal said, Lauren, we're not going to butcher the rabbits. And I said, oh, for Pete's sake, turn around. And I grabbed all the rabbits, and I took each and every one, and I butchered them all while they weren't looking so that they didn't get upset. And they were able to pass their course.
Well, very good for international relations.
I'm just not afraid.
Chopping up dead rabbits and doing stuff is like real sort of game cooking.
Yeah, I love it.
And you have time to do that because this is what you do for a living. What about you two guys?
Tile queen
and flirty girl. Do you guys cook? Do you have time with the business? And you have 3 kids,
I
right?
I don't.
Flirty?
I have 3 kids. I use a service called Dinner Bell. I sign up for it every week, and she brings dinner to my house night.
It's like Tinkerbell.
It's wonderful.
Dinner Bell. Someone brings dinner to your house every night at 6 o'clock.
We have red beans and rice every Monday. They're a New Orleans company. It wouldn't be any other way.
That's awesome.
And it's just wonderful because dinner's taken care of. It's a healthy meal, so I can get home from work with the kids. We can do homework, and dinner is ready.
What are we having tonight?
I think it's Osso Buco. I mean, it's really good stuff. I mean, my kids are eating all this fancy stuff
And you don't cook a thing.
I put it in the oven. I press preheat and go.
What are you married?
And the timer.
Do you have a husband?
I have a significant other, a partner. I am heterosexual. It's a man.
Okay.
He also is an entrepreneur. I know. Whenever I say partner, because he is more significant than a boyfriend.
So it's hard to know what title you should put on the guy.
Yes. My lover. Here we go. It's getting dirtier. But he is an entrepreneur. He owns a flip flop company called Feel Goods.
Now that's doing really well too. You guys are
t-shirts and flip flops. We just
you
need
got it
to make
all.
Pants.
If you could make some shorts, we'd be in.
I know.
We're like Jimmy Buffett.
We're both really busy, and so that's kind of service. No, so I love
the guy.
To cook.
Hey, look, the guy's making flip flops. How difficult could that be, really? You know?
Oh, you'd be amazed.
Is it difficult to make a flip flop?
Well, your window of opportunity is only a couple of months.
Yeah, I guess
he's saved, so yeah.
So he doesn't like to cook, or he can't cook, or he's not interested.
Oh, he can't cook. No, no, no.
But I love to cook. I cook almost every night.
You do? Mm-hmm. Peggy, what about you? You've got a business and you're going crazy over
there. I cook.
There.
I love to cook. I cook all the time. So I mean, I just, you know.
Do you make room, as it were, after work to cook every day?
Yes. I mean, well, let's say when I'm cooking for myself, it's like, you know, spinach and, you know, feta cheese and yummy stuff. But I like to cook. I like to cook, you know, three-course meals. I can do lots of things.
Wow.
Just
so you
give
have
me
time.
A test. I do it. Well, I make time. I mean, I right. like to say, okay, this is something I haven't tried before. I can do that. And I do it.
You like to make different stuff, like
yeah,
something you haven't made before constantly.
Yes. I mean, you know, just whatever it may be. I like Barefoot Contessa. I don't know if you... I mean, I even love her. She's amazing.
Ina Garten, of course. I think she's
amazing.
Incredible.
She's explains everything. She says, no, really, 45 minutes. You think it's going to be 20, but just do the 45.
What do you do after you've... I mean, this is a high-stress job, I would imagine, selling... You have two stores, right? One here and one in Baton Rouge.
I do have one in Baton Rouge as well.
It's a real business, and you have people working for you, that obviously... obviously requires management, and it all requires time, and it's all stressful.
Yes, it is.
What do you do to relieve
I play a lot of tennis. I like to play tennis, you know, and I try to hang out with my friends, you know, be in New Orleans, go to the quarter, go have dinner, do whatever it takes, you know.
Right. And I do think... Being in business and trying to manage being in business and...
Being a mom, if the case applies.
Yeah.
Or just being... when you run your own business and trying to be a person... It's, you know, it's not as easy as everyone thinks. I have my business, too. In addition to just food writing, I do social media for a lot of restaurants and chefs, and that business is called 50 Fork. And so, you know, that means that all day long I'm running around and I'm talking to chefs and you're doing the thing that you do, whether it's running to the tile or the T-shirt stores and so on, and squeezing in that time for whatever it may be, whether it's cooking or whether it's ordering in or whatever you may be, is just the way you cobble together your life if you want to have a business and be an entrepreneur.
But I do think part of the reason why I wanted to live in New Orleans is the idea of leisure. And that's very important. You know, I mean, I actually had a business. I did interior design work in Boulder, and I was working on, you know, what would probably today a $9 million spec house. You know, I was doing a lot of very serious things with very serious, high, you know, profiled people.
High net worth individuals, we call
huge, like cuckoo, like planes. Everybody had a plane. You know, it's like...
Well, you don't.
No, I don't have a plane. I don't really care if I ever have one. But I like used cars. But I think that's, you know, that was part of the importance of being in New Orleans. And I think that's just...
So you have more control over your time and your
leisure
time.
Yeah, and leave work at 6.
And people have their priorities right here. They don't expect you to stay.
It is about food. It is about being flirty. I mean, it is...
It is about music and culture.
Yeah.
And
that is why we're living here. Yeah.
When you want that leisure time, you don't have to travel far to find it, to go do it. And that's wonderful for entrepreneurs here.
Yeah. I mean, I always have this thing like, you know, I don't cross canal a lot because, you know, if I do that, I'm going there. Or, you know, it's like, I better, you know, I'm not going to go to work at 8:30 in the morning, you know, the next day.
So you're in uptown, so you stay uptown.
Well, I stay uptown, but if I'm going to cross canal, that's like a commitment.
Then
it's
I'm
like,
going to be out for the night.
I'm going to be out. It's like...
Okay.
I managed to cross and back and forth across, and I don't have those issues with
straddle. That's a very New Orleans thing.
Yeah. I've never heard that. That's a good way to look at it.
You straddle canal. I'm like...
You're making the commitment.
I'm like, I get the cab to pick me up. I got the glass of wine in the cab. I'm like, I'll be there.
I think
fabulous. You don't play.
I don't play.
Awesome. Well, you guys are making hanging out with all three of you sound very attractive. What can you just... We have to wrap it up here in just a moment, but before we go... I think probably anyone listening to this has heard stories, these three stories from three successful entrepreneurs, young women who've made business work for them in New Orleans. What would each one of you have to say to other women, to younger women who are listening to you, or older women, or people who are women who are thinking, I'd like to do that, I'd like to change my life, I'd like to have the courage to make my passion my business, who wants to start off and with just, you know, like a little bit of advice that you would... you could hand on.
Well, I just want to thank you for referring to me as young.
well, you're a goddess. Goddesses are beyond time.
Yeah, because this October I'll be going as Sally O'Malley in celebration of my 50, and I can kick and I can stretch. And I'll be 50 in October. So I'm going to direct my words then to my contemporaries. And my words to you are, you absolutely can do anything. It's just about finding that passion and following it. I know it's very cliche to say that, and I know that. And you think, oh, great, Lauren, I haven't done anything particularly special. I just try to be honest and be myself. And so what I would say is, if you want to be a writer, put the words on paper. I don't care where you do them, on a toilet paper. I don't care if you write them in your notebook or on a laptop. Write every single solitary day. And then put those words in front of somebody, or launch yourself a blog if you want to. Just make your presence known. And don't be intimidated or afraid or think you don't have it, because everybody has it, some form or fashion of it. And I just say, I always just say, go for it. I get calls and people writing me all the time, I really want to be a food writer. You can. I don't have a toehold on it. Go.
Okay.
Tell
all
me
right.
why.
That is very, very inspiring for the...
I hope so.
...wannabe writers and other people. I mean, just you. It's basically your advice is just go for it and do it.
Yeah, but especially in writing, I think the most important thing is to write, to get up, because you've just got to get those words out of your head and onto a piece of paper and keep going.
Tile queen.
Oh, I think that... in spite of the hardships of dealing with the city of New Orleans and dealing with certain things that are challenging in the city, the support that you get in the city is beyond anything. And
what specific advice would you give to other people, though,
who want to
make the leap from thinking about doing what they want to do to actually doing it?
Well, of course, so as not just to ditto Lauren's experience, I think... really understanding that, be passionate about it, be okay with it, and be okay with suffering a little bit. You know, I mean, you will suffer. It is hard, and you will get beaten up, and you know, you will cry. You will. I mean, and you have to be tough.
Yeah.
I think you have to be tough, but just be tough, because you know you're going to always have to be tough at anything else. And it's not as though, you know, I think sometimes people think, oh, well, you have your own business, that's great. You know, you can do whatever you want. You need to have the passion to complete the task and do it well so that you can feel successful in what you do. Don't just do it because I don't want to work for anybody else. Do it because you feel that I will do whatever it takes to make it work.
Okay, so now we have just do it and tough it out. Flirty girl, last words.
I would say, I heard a quote once, it's never too late to be what you always might have been. And I felt like I had every excuse in the world to not succeed in business. I was 27, a single mom of 3 kids, working 9 to 5, living paycheck to paycheck. I wanted to do something. So I took my tax return in 2009, $2,000, and turned it into a million-dollar company.
$2,000.
$2,000.
Million-dollar company.
Yes.
Wow.
And so that's just what
it took.
What's
the secret?
And doing what Lauren said, just doing it and putting it out there, getting on Twitter, connecting, networking, putting up a website, creating and building your brand and your community, and watching what happens. Because before you know it, you've got 100 followers, and they're loving what you're doing. And that gives you this desire to just do more and push further. And you know, I remember when I quit my full-time job, I had a store open and was commuting to Baton Rouge. I had ESPN coming and another national TV show coming, and I had to be at work in Baton Rouge in an hour, and it was like, it's time, you know.
Right.
I did want to change and do better for myself, but I mean, I definitely hung with my full-time job, eating whatever was cheap at the time, but you have to do it. I never would have thought in a million years that I would have grown Flirty Girl into the brand that it's become, and it's because I did it.
You did it. It's hard work.
It's absolutely hard work.
Wow.
And 3 kids in tow. I mean, they all know how to fold a t-shirt. You just do it.
Well, thank you so much. Flirty Girl is Lauren Tom, and the Tile Queen is Peggy Stafford. And the food goddess is Lauren Godin, and you can find links to all their websites and all their businesses and enterprises and interests on our website. It's neworleans.com. Mitch Foreman is on the piano in our studio, and our show is produced by Tanya Castellanos, Patricia Kaufman, and Mindy Hawes. The technical direction behind us here is Mitch Cry, who's working all the levers. On the web, everything goes through the Nerd Wrangler, who keeps us in line every day, Cliff Brigden. Our music director is Christian Unruh. If you'd like to be on our show as a musician or a guest, get in touch with us on our website or write to us at our email address. It's neworleans@gmail.com. Check out our other shows as well online. You can check out Psych Ward. And there's plenty more It's New Orleans Happy Hours to listen to as well. Thanks for listening to this one. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, I'm Grant Morris.